Deus Vanoptor Peer with Matt Ford, and a new person on the couch, David Vorholt, a journalist here in Germany, a German journalist at that, the first German that we're having on the podcast, to my recollection. The top four stayed pretty much the same, although defending champions Bayern Munich are now 9 points behind leaders Borussia Dortmund. And Schalke came up with a big win against Nuremberg, and we will get into their fan friendship later. But first, we're going to start the show a little differently. So Matt Ford was in Dortmund, which was one leg of the Fantastic Females exhibition tour. He also talked to one of the leaders of the tour. Take a listen.
I'm inside the Borussium, which is the Borussia Dortmund Museum, and that's one particular reason, because they have quite an interesting exhibit on at the moment. It's called Fantastic Females. It's fantastic, that's a German pun. Who said the Germans didn't have humour? And I'm sat here with Anna Horstmann, who is, well, yeah, you can introduce yourself better than I can. So yeah, Anna, introduce yourself. Tell everyone who you are.
Yes, hi, I'm Anna. I'm from the initiative Waldspielverein. We are an initiative against discrimination, and we are all football fans of Borussia Dortmund.
And you have taken on responsibility as a representative of Beispielverein to help put on this exhibit here for Fantastic Females. Tell us how you got involved with that. Where does the exhibit come from, and what is it about?
Yeah, there's a big network of female football fans in Germany. It's called FIN, Women in Football, and many of the women who organized this exhibition are part of this network, and so as we know each other, and so it was pretty clear that the exhibition should stop in Dortmund. The makers of the exhibition are from FSE, Football Supporter Europe, and they are all part of FIN too, so
it's really interesting. We've just spent half an hour, 45 minutes looking around it. I think, how many people have they interviewed? 60?
Over 70.
Over 70 women?
From over 20 countries.
Okay, so yeah, female football fans from all over Europe and all over the world. Some of whom are normal fans, some of whom are in fan groups, some of whom are in ultra groups, some of whom are even on the board at one club in Sweden. That's the exhibition here. But tell us a little bit about your experiences and your story as a female fan of Borussia Dortmund. When did you start going to games?
Okay, I started when I was 3 years old. My father took me to a match, and I wasn't really interested. So most of the game I spent at the playground. That was the start, and I grew up in Dortmund, and when I was a child, Borussia Dortmund was very famous and
successful.
And so there was no other option.
Do you remember your first game at the Westfalenstadion?
Yeah, I don't know who was the sorry.
You can't remember who the opponent was.
Yes.
Oh yeah, that's fine.
But now you're
a season ticket holder. Right?
Sorry?
Now you're a season ticket holder.
When I was a child, I went with my family and with my aunt and uncle and my cousins to the stadium. But since I'm 12 years old, I've got a seasonal card at the Südtribüne.
Yeah.
And so I spend most of my free time at the stadium and around football. Things,
Of course, because we're talking about the exhibit here today, I obviously need to ask you: what's it like as a woman on the Südtribüne? Do you feel safe? Have you had positive experiences? Have you had bad experiences? Or why do you think it's so important that this exhibition about Fantastic Females has come to Dortmund?
Yeah, I think it's very important because the representation of female football fans isn't strong enough. When you think about a football fan, he's always a man. So it's very important to show that there are so many different women who love football, and in Dortmund there are some sexist chants I don't like. So there are many things to do.
To change things, to
make them better. Mm-hmm. And I think it's the start.
It's a good start to get some changes rolling in Dortmund.
And to get a big public view of this topic.
Yeah, and how has the exhibition been received so far by Dortmund fans and by people in Dortmund? Do you have a lot of visitors here?
We had three events while the exhibition is here. So two times we visited the exhibition with other BVB fans, and one time we got a big workshop day around this topic, how you can represent women in football better.
Okay.
There were lots of visitors, mm-hmm. and the feedback was very positive, so we think it's the right way. Yeah.
Well, you talked about the image that people have of football fans. They think they're predominantly male. So what sort of cliches do you or have you had to deal with in your life as a female fan?
When I was younger, I was used to go to the stadium with a Hello Kitty purse. And many other women yelled at me, how can you go to the stadium like this?
Okay.
And I think that's a important thing about women in football. There are many cliches. Women don't want to see at other women, so they want to be a part of the male football community.
You were talking about that before. You were saying how at the start you sometimes used to try and ignore some of the more sexist chants or comments or sexist banners because there seems to be this feeling that if I just ignore it, then I'll become accepted as part of the group. But when did that start to change for you? When did you start to decide actually? No, I don't want to stand here and listen to people talking about being sons of whores or whatever.
Yeah, I've got some friends who were much more sensitive than me, so they told me, think about what you're saying. Yeah, maybe it's not good to use female genitals as a bad word. And then I started to study gender studies. Now I would say I'm a feminist and I'm a BVB fan, and that are both very important things for me, so I can bring them together here.
What are the most important concerns for a female fan on a match day that you think still need to be addressed?
I think at the entries you need more female stewards because there are long rows for women and men can go in very easy.
Yeah.
And in many stadiums, there are not enough facilities for women. That's a really big problem for female fans of smaller football teams.
I think it's true. If you go to the security checks outside the stadium, obviously they're all male stewards checking the majority of male fans, so you end up having just one lady there with a huge queue of girls trying to get in, and obviously it takes a lot longer. That's definitely something that could change. I think you mentioned before as well, like having a female contact point within the stadium where you can say, look, I've heard comments that I don't want to hear, or I know some men have maybe had a little bit too much to drink and have got a little bit too touchy. That's obviously something that could be changed. Do you think there is progress being made in Dortmund and in Germany in general?
Oh, I think there are many events that put a spotlight on it. Not only in Dortmund but all in Germany, but all in all all people could be much more sensitive. From the club itself to the stewards to the fans.
Okay. So definitely an issue which includes everybody that's involved with football.
It's not only a problem of a woman. It's the whole society
who has
changed the mind.
Definitely. Well, hopefully this exhibition here will educate a few visitors as to what exactly the problems are that women face going to football, because I think it is something that you don't tend to consider. And yet we look at the board at the front there, it says that approximately 20% or even more than 20% of visitors to a stadium in Germany are females. That's over one in five, and that's that's not a minority, is it? Really? No. It's not a small minority anyway. So just finishing up with the exhibit here, like we said, there's over 60, 70 women who have been interviewed. Some of them really stand out. I mean, my favourite was Maria Petri from London, 79-year-old female Arsenal fan who has not missed a game of what, the first team, the second team, the girls' team, the boys' team, since 1950. So she's clearly mental, but yeah, fair play to her. Is there a particular female fan who stands out in the exhibit for you? A particular one that you always think of?
For sure, I think about the two representatives of BVB.
Yeah.
Yeah, they are Ramona Steding and Trixi Schleichen, and yeah, they.
Ramona is involved with the fanzine, with Schwarz-Gelb.
Yeah, yeah. Ramona is from Schwarz-Gelb, yeah. And Trixie is leader of the BVB fan abteilung.
Yeah, so the fan department.
She's a really big impact of the BVB fanzine. Yeah. So yeah, they are really impressing women. Yeah.
There you go, you see. So yes, obviously not just men who are involved in the fan department, you know, not just men who are involved in fanzines, as we saw as well, not just men who are involved in ultra groups as well. So certainly a lot to see. So yeah, just as a quick reminder, this is, we're talking here at the end of November, but it's here for another week.
Until the 1st of December.
Until the 1st of December, and then after that, the exhibition is going on tour, isn't it, around Germany?
Yes, I think the next stop is Halle.
Halle, okay, yeah. So it's over in Eastern Germany towards Leipzig. So anyone who's listening and makes trips over to Germany, have a look at the website, Fantastic Females. And see if maybe you can combine your next trip to Germany with a visit to the latest.
That was Matt Ford in Dortmund, and now for some Bundesliga talk with Matt and David Vorhold. All right, guys, if we had learned anything from this match day is that if you have a 3-1 lead over Fortuna Düsseldorf in Allianz Arena, you should really be holding on to the edge of your seat, because apparently it's not safe anymore.
If you're leading against anyone, you can give it away in the Bundesliga this weekend, can't you? So Hoffenheim with 3-1 up against Hertha as well.
It was another blow to the Niko Kovac campaign, this Niko Kovac stay campaign, I should say. I saw on Twitter there was a pro Kovac or Provac contingent now in the Bayern Munich ranks, the fandom ranks anyways. Kind of a game that Bayern Munich just really let slip away, because there were times that they were dominating that game, but it really was their complacency that let that game get out of hand, wasn't it?
Complacency, yeah. I think that's a really good way of putting it. Complacency in, not just in terms of the tactical approach of just simply not closing Düsseldorf down, or and not paying attention to Düsseldorf's main threat, and we all know what that is, and we all knew they were going to play on the counter attack with Luca Bacchio up front, and they play such a high line against them, so I thought they were asking for trouble, weren't they? But unfortunately, from a Bayern point of view, it's nothing new, is it? It was the same complacency that we've seen coming into a few of their performances recently.
Yeah. Yeah, David, we haven't had you on the podcast so far, so we can ask you the fresh question of what do you make of Niko Kovac and the way he has approached the season with Bayern Munich?
I have two points of view on that topic. So first of all, the coach isn't the problem in such a situation. When there's a team like Bayern Munich that has won a lot of titles in the last years and is picked with top players, it's definitely like that. You have no explanation for losing a 3-1 lead against Fortuna Düsseldorf, so that relegated before the season. The only reason could be that the players really are playing against the coach, so then you have a problem as a coach, then you are maybe not the right one, even though you don't do any wrong decisions or something. But when there's the climate isn't okay, so Carlo Ancelotti lived that in Munich, then you have that problem that your team doesn't want you. And when a team, and they are that powerful in those days, doesn't want you, they can play against you. And I don't know whether they did, but it could be possible, I think. The other problem is the squad. So Bayern always had some summer transfer periods in the last years where they didn't make that much. So it all worked out in the last years, but this time it seems to not work out, because the wingers, Robin Ribery, they are too old, so the younger wingers are injured at the moment, and this team is really not able to play that football.
Yeah, I think that's a good point that David made, which was I was wondering the same thing, because you see on some of these counterattacks, you see David Alaba just loafing along as if he's not really supposed to be part of the action, but he really is. I mean, you have to wonder whether these players are really playing for Niko Kovac at the moment, because Niko Kovac has had the reputation of maybe he's not the most bright, he's not the brightest tactically, but he gets his players up for the games, and he gets his, and a lot of players like to play for him. It doesn't seem that, like that at the moment, does it?
I think saying Kovac is maybe not the brightest tactically is a little bit harsh on Kovac. We all know that, we've discussed it before, we all know the sort of style of football that he had Frankfurt playing, and yes, it was definitely more pragmatic than progressive, put it that way, but there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that, given the resources at his disposal in Frankfurt. I thought that was absolutely fine.
Well, he's not a tactical innovator, that's what I would say. He's not someone then that would come into Bayern Munich and change the way that they play tactically. Well, like Pep Guardiola did.
That was the question beforehand. Yeah, okay, whether we were expecting him to come over and launch a revolution the way Guardiola did, okay, probably not. But I think one of the questions hanging over him was, yeah, can he come in to Bayern now and with different and higher quality resources at his disposal? Can he then impose a different style of football, a more progressive style of football on a football team, because he had a different environment to do it than he had in Frankfurt? That was the question at the start of the season, and it's a question which hasn't been answered yet. Perhaps it's still too early. We're only on match day 12.
We do have to say also, but I mean, having this discussion, I mean, Uli Hoeneß said that a decision could come regarding Niko Kovac in the next 2 days.
Perhaps, yeah. I mean, I think...
So what we're saying now, I mean, you might be listening to this now after the fact. Maybe he's gotten the best endorsement that a Bayern Munich coach has ever gotten, or he's sacked by at this point. But at the same time, it is still early in the season, and maybe the fact that he hasn't had time to implement his system is a valid one.
Maybe, but it's only to be expected that the magnifying glass is even closer and even stronger at Bayern Munich, isn't it? That's always has been the case, and always will be the case. Going back to what Dave was saying about the players not playing for him, I think you're partly.
I even said they play against him.
You know, not playing for him or playing against him. I think you're partly right. I'm not sure if they're doing it actively though. I think it's more of a subconscious thing. I genuinely don't think that those players there are actively playing against Niko Kovac. I genuinely don't believe that's the case. But I do think there could, without being a psychological expert, I do think there could be something somewhere subconsciously that makes these players who. They're not all as old as Robin and Ribery, but have all won so much, so young, have won everything there is to win. Is there an element in their heads, subconsciously, that, you know, we've won this, we've won that, we've won this, we've won that? Who on earth is 47-year-old Niko Kovac, who won the single DFB Pokal with Eintracht Frankfurt? I wonder if there's something subconscious just holding them back.
But those success reasons and those tactical reasons, you can discuss that, but I think that can't be the answer for such a disaster Bayern had on Saturday against a team like Fortuna Düsseldorf. They were fighting well, they did their thing very well. Nothing against Düsseldorf, but it doesn't matter how many injured players or which tactical system you play against them. Bayern Munich has to beat this team at home, yeah. Clearly, always. So, and then you can go and go inside some kind of tactical talks and all the things. But I think the reasons for those dramas they get at home at the moment are much more easier. So there's really a team that doesn't play for the coach, and maybe they even play against him. And I think so. Professional footballers in those days, they do things like this. Like Carlo Ancelotti said, I think a few months ago, he talked a little bit about his Bayern time, and he was always a coach definitely respected by all his players, and it didn't work out in Munich because he had four or five players that were with him. So, and I think the situation now is pretty similar. So maybe Kovac doesn't make every decision right. Maybe he even does wrong decisions or something, but that can't be lead to a 3-3 after 3-1 in front against Düsseldorf. So there must be more wrong in the whole construction of the club, of the team.
Obviously, it's not the first time either. I mean, this is the fourth Bundesliga home game in a row for Bayern that they've not won, and that's the first time. That's the first time in years or even ever, was it?
I can only guess
what the exact statistic was, but
for a very long time, yeah.
Four Bundesliga home games without a win is practically unheard of at Bayern. Obviously, we saw what happened again. You know, they were thrashed at home to Gladbach. They had the 1-1 against Augsburg. Struggles in the Champions League. The Ajax game comes to mind, mm-hmm. And yeah, it could end up being a similar situation tomorrow night against Benfica. How long has Kovac actually got left? Or David, obviously you talked about the sort of ultimatum that Uli Hoeneß was putting out there.
Well, let me ask you about that, because when Uli Hoeneß said that, I thought it was really interesting, because there was a point that I saw on social media, which was, do you think that Niko Kovac is playing the way that he wants to play right now?
I don't know how he wants to play. I really don't. Like I said, I think that's the question mark that was over him.
But do you think he's the one that gets to make that decision? I think that was a very interesting point, in that you don't, I mean, with how strong this Bayern leadership is and how much power that they want to have, you have to ask whether this team is actually Niko Kovac's team that's playing on the field, or whether it's somebody else's.
I don't think tactically, I don't imagine that what Kovac is trying to implement is actually that much different to what they were playing under Heinkes. They weren't known for a particularly high pressing, aggressive, transitional, counter-attacking game under Heinkes, were they? Or Ancelotti before that? Bayern have always been a bit of an exception in that case, in terms of the Bundesliga. I don't think that, I don't imagine that would be the style Kovac would be aiming for anyway, at least based on what we've seen from his teams in the past at Frankfurt. But even so, yeah, I think regardless of what the tactical plan is that he wants to implement, I think it's quite obvious that he's coming up against a bit of resistance, whether actively or passively, from some of the older, more experienced players in that squad for whatever reason.
Yeah, David, how much of a grasp do you think that Niko Kovac actually has on this team?
Absolutely. So let's go to the question you discussed before. So the squad is definitely 100% Niko Kovac's squad. I think even though when he's not that experienced coach in the Bundesliga or something, when there was really a situation where a president or any other official of the club would really take directly influence to the manager and the squad, I think every manager would quit the job, really. I really think so. So I think this is more subtle how this works. Maybe so. The squad on the pitch is always a Kovac squad. He manages the squad. He decides which 11 players play. Maybe the situation is a little bit more complicated when there are players that are in the opinion, okay, this one has to play or this one has not to play, or we have to play like this, and maybe the officials are in the same opinion. Maybe then, outside, there is some kind of a negative energy for the coach when officials and players, stick together in their view.
Opinion. I don't think that's far fetched either. It wouldn't surprise me at all if it was the case that even if it's not been actively spoken about, that the likes of Arjen Robben and Mats Hummels and Frank Ribery and Lewandowski share the same opinion tactically or in terms of the lineup or in terms of training methods or even transfer policy or anything like that, if they share the same opinions as Uli Hoeneß, if that is the case, then that's bypassing not just Kovac but also Salihamidzic, who technically in his function as sporting director should have control of that, but we've all spoken before about how we're not convinced how strong he is in his role. But yeah, that's a problem if they're bypassing the coach like that, then there's no solution to that for Bayern. That's a problem.
Right, so we have this game on Tuesday. It's Tuesday night between Bayern Munich and Benfica. Like Matt, you said, Matt, this is another game that's going to happen in Allianz Arena. What do we expect? We can't really go into too much how much what we expect from Benfica because we're not Liga NOS experts. But
They're fourth, I believe.
Yeah.
So
what? Fourth. Yeah, ooh,
4 points behind Sporting Lisbon. Oh, right. No, Lisbon or Porto are top. I don't know.
So exactly my point. Exactly. But do we expect Bayern to win that game? Is this a game that we should expect Bayern to win?
I do expect them to win. But now, given the way it's progressed, I wouldn't be surprised if it ends up 1-1, similar to the Ajax game. I think a defeat is the only situation in which case serious questions will be asked. about Kovac's job before next week.
I see it in a different way. I think they will definitely win this game because the Champions League is just too much important for the club, for everything. So I think they will perform. They will maybe not play the best football of the last 10 years or something, but I think they will perform pretty well and get a serious win against Benfica. No doubt about that. But I think that the destiny of Kovac doesn't really depend on this game. So when you see or when you hear what Hoeneß said the last weekend after this horrible Düsseldorf game, it was horrible, definitely. But 2 weeks ago he said, I will fight for this coach until the end. And now he says, okay, we have to talk after the Lisboa game. So that means we have to talk non-depending from the result. And I think they will, question first, win seriously. But I think this will sack, or will Kovac getting sacked too.
Matt, do you think this game is important for Kovac's career at Bayern Munich?
Only if he loses.
Only if he loses.
Yeah, I think okay. If he loses, it's quite clear. Yeah. But I think after that, I expect it to be a draw or even a win. After that, I agree with Dave in that these discussions are obviously going to take place regardless of what the result is. And we'll see where they go from there, because ultimately, as much as Kovac hasn't convinced yet, I still think the problems at Bayern actually go a lot deeper. We've mentioned Salihamidzic before and his role. We've mentioned the influence that Hoeneß and Rummenigge both have. We've mentioned the fact that Rummenigge and Hoeneß don't even see eye to eye on a lot of things anyway. So there's all sorts of questions which need to be answered surrounding that club, and none of that is a good environment in which to carry out this transition which they've all been talking about. And it's looking like they're looking at losing a year. I don't know. Can you see them catching up to catching Borussia Dortmund up now?
Well, they're down 10 points now.
It is only match day 12.
It is only match day 12. They're down 10 points.
Nine points.
Or nine points. Yeah. So they at this point, I really think that they. I have personally already made the reservation in my mind that they are now focusing on catching Gladbach for second rather than Borussia Dortmund for first. Not just because of the way that they're playing, but also because of the way that Borussia Dortmund are playing.
There's a long way to go. I mean, there's...
of course there is. But we're already a third of the way through the season.
A friend of mine actually said to me the other day, he said, I'll bet you that Bayern will still win the league. I'll put money on it. And if he'd have said that this time last year, or even in previous years, I probably wouldn't take the bet. Yeah, of course, they will catch up, because we all know how weak the rest of the league is and what qualities Bayern always had in reserve. I just think this year, for the reasons I mentioned, the various areas of difficulty at Bayern, I just think there's so much going on. I just don't think that's as clear-cut this year. So as early as it is, it's a real mountain to climb for them from here.
So let's get on to a different type of topic. Schalke beat Nuremberg 5-2, which is not necessarily the most surprising part of that game. But the most surprising part, I think, for fans that are more casual followers of the Bundesliga is that Nuremberg and Schalke have such a deep fan connection, to the point that there was a big fan choreo before the game with both sets of fans. Matt, this was the topic, is something that you wanted to talk about. Do you want to shed some light on what this connection between Schalke fans and Nuremberg fans is?
Yeah, I think first of all, one other surprising aspect of that game was obviously that Schalke scored 5 goals. I think it wasn't it surprising that Schalke managed to score more than 1 or 2 in a game the first time they scored 5 under Tedesco. So that was a nice surprise for Schalke fans, I think, showing that they can actually score goals.
Right, but the results that Nuremberg have had this season against Leipzig and against Dortmund and against some other teams this season, it would suggest that Nuremberg giving up 5 goals wasn't necessarily... or Christian Mathenia coming up with some ridiculous... and they needing to be substituted off. That's not necessarily surprising.
Yeah, you do worry for Nuremberg on their travels. There have been some shockers. But as you said, there was a huge choreography between the two sets of fans. It cost over 22,000 euros to produce this huge display covering all 4 stands at the Veltins Arena in Gelsenkirchen. And it's because, and this is going to sound weird to a lot of people, and that's probably because it is quite weird, Schalke and Nuremberg are best friends, football friends in Germany. And they're probably the best, Dave, we were talking about before, weren't we? They're probably the best example of a so-called fan friendship or Fanfreundschaft in German football, where, yeah, certain groups of fans are, they don't dislike each other, they don't fight each other, they don't hate each other, they get on well.
But this is kind of weird, David, because it's, I mean, fans are supposed to hate each other, aren't they?
Yeah, usually they do, or they are supposed. this has a special history, this fan friendship. So it was a first fan friendship in Germany, which was founded between Schalke and Nuremberg. The history is, from what I remember, that Schalke had a away trip in Munich and got attacked by Munich fans or anything like this at a train or a train station. I don't know exactly. And there were Nuremberg fans in the area that supported the Schalke crew against the Bayern Munich fans. And this was the birth of this fan friendship, like the saga says, I would mean. But it was definitely the first moment of an idea like this. So, and for that reason, it's for me not the best example, like Matt said, or not only the best example for a fan friendship. It is actually the only example for fan friendship, because in the last years there grew a lot new fan friendships. For example, Cologne and Borussia Dortmund, they like each other, and I think this is, maybe it is, has some kind of a history of fans, okay, but in the end it's some kind of a commercial or tactical positioning, and
I'm not sure if it's commercial. I think there's various reasons for these fan.
It's used for commercial.
Yeah, it is sometimes. Yeah, yeah. True. You could buy Borussia Dortmund scarves in the Cologne fan shop, I think,
exactly,
at one point. But there are different reasons for it. Obviously, Dave mentioned the roots of this Schalke Nuremberg thing being in a bit of a confrontation at a game. Others are based on historic matches. I think historically, doesn't the Cologne Dortmund one goes back to when Cologne prevented Leverkusen from winning the league and therefore helped Dortmund to win the league, and I think from that moment the Dortmund fans really appreciated that, or something like that anyway. Others just come from particular contacts between certain groups of fans or individuals even, and grow from that. Others are political, clubs who might share similar political, or fan bases who share similar political beliefs. But not, I'd say none are lived to the extent of Schalke and Jorgenberg, where it's not just the ultras, or not just the hooligans, or not just a few fans. It's the whole club. The clubs actively do this. And there was an interesting video that Schalke put out last year at Christmas, like the Gelsenkirchen Christmas story of basically like a couple of Schalke fans walking around, like acting out the nativity story, looking at Mary and Joseph looking for somewhere to stay. And then they kept knocking on doors, and they were always Dortmund fans who said, 999, like, go away. And then eventually he found someone, and it was a Nuremberg fan. And he said, yeah, of course, Schalke, come in. And so that was officially put out on Schalke's YouTube channel. Yeah. So these things are officially done by the clubs as well.
Yeah,
so
maybe that's strange. Maybe that's what David meant by by also something commercial. David, is that Schalke Nuremberg one? Is that really a well known one throughout Germany? Does everybody know? Oh, Schalke Nuremberg fans. They always get along.
I would say it doesn't know everybody in Germany, but everybody interested in football and not deeply interested, so interested in football and having a look on the Bundesliga regularly should be supposed to know, I think. Yes, maybe not everybody, but definitely the majority. There are two unique points about this. One thing I said before, there's a history, so even when there are fans or that share an opinion, a political base or something, they can do that, and this is okay, and this is a reason for getting sympathy for each other. But you don't have this historical happening, what you have with Schalke and Nuremberg, what I told before. And another point as example for how deep and how serious this fan friendship is, that I personally, I don't know whether there is maybe a song, I don't know, but Schalke and Nuremberg is the only fan friendship I know that has a song that is frequently sung at the stadium. So it's Schalke and the FCN. Mm-hmm. It's a song I know, and I don't care about Schalke, and I don't care about Nuremberg, but I know this song. So that's a unique point about all this, I think. And everything besides is okay, and I don't have a problem with that, or I don't say that's not a good thing, but the only true story about fan friendship is that one.
It was quite an interesting one back in the old Berlin, when Berlin was still split. I think I'm right in saying, Dave, correct me if I'm wrong, obviously, during the Cold War, there were contacts between Union Berlin fans and Hertha Berlin fans. Obviously, Hertha Berlin being based in West Berlin and Union being based in East Berlin.
If you want to hear more about that, we talked a lot about it last week. But sorry, continue.
Did we?
Yeah, when we talked about when we did our spotlight on Hertha Berlin, we did.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, so, yeah, go back to that one. So, yeah, that's also interesting.
Yeah, Matt has a short-term memory, so I have to remind him all of this stuff.
That's obviously stopped since the wall came down. But yeah, these things can stop and start, and it definitely seems strange. I get a lot of people saying to me, especially back home, saying like, "What? They're friends with each other? How can you be friends?" But it is a phenomenon that's not just unique to Germany. I think it does exist elsewhere in Europe as well.
I think so,
it?
Yes.
But yeah, a weird phenomenon, but a phenomenon that exists nonetheless.
And another point, I think it's definitely possible that fan friendship like Schalke and Nuremberg exist in lower leagues or something. Maybe examples, I don't know, maybe regional examples. I wouldn't say that this is the only one in Germany. I would better say this is the only one in the Bundesliga or in the professional leagues. So, but in those professional circumstances, it's some kind of a unique thing, yeah.
So what's interesting about that connection too is we've mentioned it, I think, before when we were talking about Nuremberg. They've sold a lot of players recently to Schalke as well.
Burgstaller.
Yeah, and one of them, Guido Burgstaller, was one of the five goal scorers yesterday.
Schöpf also.
Yeah. So you mentioned it before. I mean, it is a big deal that I did undersell the fact that, I mean, Schalke scoring five goals is a big deal. Granted, I mean, Robert Bauer got sent off, but was there something that encouraged you about Schalke when they played, Matt?
I like that they were getting the ball forward a lot quicker. I thought they spent a lot of time in recent weeks getting bogged down in midfield. Sebastian Rudi, unfortunately, I think, has been the main culprit of that, and that was on show as well against Nuremberg. I thought whenever the ball went via Rudi in midfield for Schalke, I thought that slowed them down a lot. I don't know what's wrong with Sebastian Rudi, but he certainly hasn't reached anywhere near his full potential at Schalke yet, and they were much more impressive when they moved a lot quicker going forward. Whether it helped that they had quite a pacey striker in Steven Skripsby, who started for the first time for Schalke, and obviously scored his first two goals as well. Perhaps that helped. I think they lack a bit of pace sometimes, and I think that's bound to happen when Guido Burgstaller is your main striker. Then again, I'm not sure if that's the attacking blueprint that Tedesco really wants to go for. We've talked a lot, haven't we, about Tedesco can organise a team at the back, organise a stable team, but has he got an offensive attacking idea? Maybe we saw a little glimpse of that against Nuremberg, but there's a long way to go, and Tedesco, for me, has still got a lot of convincing to do.
Yeah, David, they have a big game. They have a recently big game in the Champions League against Porto, which could help be one of the determining factors whether they go on to the round of 16 or not. Did anything in this game suggest to you that they could do the job against Porto?
I would say yes. I don't think whether I would bet on it, but I think when Schalke, this was a model of success all the last season. So a stable, solid defensive. And I think they are going back to this, what they've maybe lost a little bit in the beginning of the season. When they are able to manage this and get back to this stable defense, I think they, in between, have the the faith in themselves to get this on track in the offense. I think this Nuremberg game, and even the fact it's five goals, can help the players to just get a little more loose on thinking about all this, so they don't have any blockades or something. So you have to say that like Skripsky or even Burgstaller, they are not the first row in the offensive. So they have injured players like Schalke always has. For example, again, Embolo and all those players. To your question, yes, I think they are able to manage Porto. Porto does play a little equal style like Schalke. They are very hard defensive. They are very good in the aerial duels and all things. So I think it won't be much goals. It will be a tough and
I think Frankfurt, Schalke's obviously quite fortunate. They've got a relatively straightforward Champions League group, at least on paper. It's probably the easiest looking one, isn't it? Whether that will actually benefit them if they end up going through, I'm not sure, because I think their focus absolutely has to be on the Bundesliga. I think although the top four currently are all having fantastic seasons, I think the rest of the league is so interchangeable at the moment. Perhaps Bayern aside, that's a slight separate issue, but everyone else there, I think there's definitely room for Schalke to get on. If anyone gets on the run in that league, they can move up there quite quickly. If I was a Schalke fan, that would have to be my main focus. That although the Champions League is great and they see themselves the Champions League club, they have to make sure they're in the Champions League next year. At the moment, they're miles off that. So, lots of work to do, and it's not abroad for Schalke, it's domestically in Germany.
Don't forget the money. I think this club is every club has, but I think especially Schalke has a very huge interest in reaching the next round. Maybe when they drop off in the next round, in the first knockout round, it's maybe okay for the sports ambitions they have or something. So no one will go there and say this is a catastrophe or something. But I think that the club officials will tell also the coach, take this for absolute serious. So this money we can really invest in the future. And maybe they are supposed to not reach the Champions League this year. So they would have to work a lot together from now on, even though we have 12 games played. But the gap is pretty big, and I don't see that Schalke will be able, even when some injured players come back, to make just a sprint like winning 7 or 8 games in a row. I don't think so. So I would really guess that they won't reach the Champions League via the Bundesliga. So this is a painful losing of money, of income, and seen from that point on, they. They are almost depending on getting into the knockout stages.
So. I think it is a long shot to get back. I mean, it's clear they'll go for it, but I think the difference is this year, that, like I said, those top four are all looking so strong.
Yeah, long shot in the Bundesliga, yeah.
Yeah, they're all looking so strong. And, yeah, you wonder if eventually participation in the Europa League could potentially catch up with either Red Bull or Frankfurt. Who knows? It's not showing any sign of that yet. So hopefully that will continue. Gladbach's a big question for me. They've not got any European distractions. They've got absolutely nothing preventing them.
No cup distractions either.
Oh yeah. So they've got absolutely nothing preventing them now, from between now and the end of the season, pushing on week after week after week with that absolutely electrifying front four that they have. Obviously, 4 goals again at the weekend. I agree with Dave. It'll be difficult for Schalke to get top four this year.
Yeah. But so do you think? I mean, We kind of got onto this. I mean, it does make sense for them then to go for the Champions League this season. I mean, I know that you said they should focus on the Bundesliga, but like you said, it's very interchangeable. But by the same token, they haven't been in the Champions League in 5 years. I mean, they normally before they were not in the Champions League. They normally made it to the knockout stages. So
depends who they get in the next round. I think if they get. No matter who they get.
Well, I mean, they might as well go. I mean, they might as well take it seriously and give the team the last 16 at least a run for it, don't you think?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah. All right. That'll do it for this week's edition of Tribuna Weekly. You can subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts. And if you do, please leave us a friendly review. You can also like our Tribuna Podcast Facebook page and follow us on Twitter at Tribuna Podcast. Matt Ford is on Twitter at Matt_4D. David Forhold at Davis Easy. And you know that I like that one. I'm at Davis_Van Hopdorp. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon.